Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a columnist.
I don't believe what I just saw.
You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Personally, I think you got hosed on that call.
Yeah, yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-ball players and people that are, you know, in broadcast.
What about a talk show host?
This is In the Booth.
Talk show host, that's good.
I think I'd be good at that. I talk to people all the time.
With Matt Park.
All right, Susan, I thank you. And once again, good afternoon, everybody. We welcome you to opening day. What a day. Beautiful downtown Syracuse. Balmy, I believe, is the word that applies today. A lot of people out and about walking to and from lunch on the blocks of Armory Square. And Yankee opening day, Mets opening day, across Major League Baseball, all the teams getting fired up. And Yankees and Mets kind of an exclusive window here for a little bit as they have the 1 o'clock games and nothing here until the next few minutes before another wave of games starts. Yankees already off to a 3-0 lead thanks to a home run from Luke Voit. And the Mets got a good start against the Nationals on the road. Max Scherzer, I saw, struck out six the first time through the lineup. Six of the first nine men he faced, he struck out. But Robbie Cano went deep for a 1-0 New York Mets lead. So that's how we join you today. Sweet 16 gets going tonight. What's better? This might be the best individual day to be a sports fan in America. And no football.
Hope springs eternal, as they would say.
I don't really believe that part of it. You know,
for the Orioles?
Well, to me, it's not. And yeah, there's a lot of teams that don't really have the hope. I understand the romanticism of everybody being 0-0 on opening day. To me, it's just, it's cool because I love seeing the grass and the energy and around the color around baseball. I love baseball. Sweet 16 happening tonight. All good, exciting stuff. Masters coming around and good time to be a sports fan.
You're a TV radio nerd, and this may be something they don't have in the Padres broadcast, or I haven't seen in a Padres broadcast. What do you think of this? The strike zone is like super HD compared to the rest of the screen. See, look how clear the catcher is. Like the strike zone is highlighted with a clearer.
Oh, I see. What they've done is they've shaded the rest.
Yeah.
There's a slight filter over the rest of the screen. It's almost like
it's like they brightened
lightened that one area. That I think I probably would prefer they didn't do. It doesn't really bother me, and until you pointed it out, I hadn't noticed it in the first couple of pitches. We're not exactly dealing with a 50-inch right off the assembly line, top of the line television here in the Galaxy.
But it lets you
studio.
Know if the pitcher's in the strike zone.
Did you have a problem telling that before? Usually they, you know, they
pronounced now. And they're doing that on they're showing where every pitch ends now.
Yeah, I think they've done that. Maybe the Yankees haven't, but certainly ESPN has done that. When the pitch crosses the plate, you get the dot and the speed. So that was a 93-mile-an-hour fastball inside.
It's like watching the game and having the internet version of watching, you know, those original.
Right, the well, streaming. MLB at bat, the app, and has that kind of thing going.
It's pretty cool.
A lot of technology advancements. I'm all for souping up those types of things in baseball. What I thought you were getting at is right before we'd seen a batter's sort of spray chart where they had indicated how likely he was to hit it at any given spot. And in the age of defensive shifts, that's one way to think along with the manager and get a feel for it.
The one thing I don't like about this is the catcher is more clear now than the rest of the picture.
I'll tell you what.
And it's distracting
As you know better than anybody, I'm pretty attentive to detail. Until you started bringing that up, I wouldn't really have thought that much about it. Again, it's on a small screen in here.
Yeah.
I reserve judgment after I've watched
a
couple games.
You get home to your rich palatial estate with your 70-inch TVs.
I don't think you have to, you know, you don't have to exactly live in Shangri-La to have a better TV screen than what we have here in the booth. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. I actually have two very similar TVs at home, one of which...
I'm like an old guy right now, shaking my fist.
Right.
Technology!
Well, the best way to see it here, and this is tremendous radio, but is when the catcher kind of shifts or gets out of his area, where you really notice is the contrast on the dirt on the warning track behind home plate. You can see that it's much sort of brighter and shinier. And I'd have to, the rest of these camera shots don't look as though they're shaded in any way. They've either put more light kind of in that box. That's what it really...
Yeah, they've lightened but one little box.
No, I think it's the other way around. I think what they've done is put about a 5% filter on everything else. They've intentionally made everything else kind of darker, which I'm not really in favor of. Just put the square there. Listen, like, what's funny is a lot of people don't like K-Zone on their TV screen to begin with, and here we are doing the grumpy old man. Just get me to the regular K-Zone. I don't need the souped-up version.
I don't need
I will say this, though. Football, I don't need what NBC did, what they call it, the I forget what they even call it now, third down.
Where they show the green area
to
the
first
down.
With that. Just stop. And the justification is, well, a lot of people watch games in bars, and they, you know, really... I think a lot of what they do is there's a certain point of adding to the broadcast, and then there's sort of insulting the intelligence
of
the viewer.
Yeah, I hate the two-field goal range also.
Oh, I like that.
That's subjective. You don't know if that's...
Well, no.
It gives you false hope as a fan.
It's not subjective. It is based on their career long.
Yeah.
Well, there's no guarantee they're going to hit their career long every time.
Yeah,
you're
not in field goal range.
No. That I would make that little...
It's a little false
hope-y. Myself. But Yanks off to a 3-0 lead as they bat in the bottom of the third. You can hear that game if you'd rather listen to that than us on TK99. We'll visit with Mike Waters coming up in a bit. Touch base with him on a number of basketball items, certainly Syracuse basketball, but also as had been kind of in the works and rumored here for the last little bit. Patrick Beilein of Lemoyne has taken the job at Niagara to be their new head coach, so very good for Coach Beilein. That's a great next step for him in his career. Yesterday, Nate Oates of Buffalo took the Alabama job. So Buffalo is open. We might get Mike's thoughts on that. Tyus Battle has an autograph signing at the mall coming up this week, which if you thought there was any chance that he would return or would just be testing the waters again in the NBA, forget about that. That is a GoPro move. And Mike happens to be a Baltimore Orioles fan, so we'll get to his thoughts on his team already down. After losing 1,000 games last year, they're already down 4-0 in the third inning of their first game of this season. So we'll touch base with Mike on that on the show. Your phone calls are welcome, 437-7644-ESPN44, if you'd like to chime in with some game day, opening day enthusiasm. Sweet 16 tonight. What a great day to watch some sports. Looking forward to doing that. We'll be back with more as we roll along. In the Booth, visit with Mike Waters on the other side. This is In the Booth on ESPN Radio Syracuse.
This is In the Booth, presented by CH Insurance, in your corner.
And we welcome you back in the booth. Penultimate show of the year. Got one tomorrow, and then that is it. We'll step aside. We'll give you a little breather for a while.
This is my last one, sadly.
Come back if and when we choose to. And that's... liberation for all of us. Last show with Paulie.
Don't miss me too much.
Yeah. I don't know how the show will be able to go on without without Paulie.
Tomorrow's moving day.
Very good. Just too bad he's moving within the city. That's the problem. Mike Waters joins us for his usual slice of this frivolity and enjoyment. It's a real highlight of your week, isn't it, Mike?
I got it circled on my calendar every Thursday, 2:15, mm-hmm. and then I get little hearts and rainbows around it on the calendar.
Right. Something to look forward to. Opening day, unfortunately, Mike, for your Oreos, not
so, how we doing
got
so
a base
far,
runner. We'll wait to decide here whether that was a hit or an error, but they do now have a runner at second base, which is more than we can say for much of what's happened so far in the game. 4-0 Yankees in the fourth on opening day.
On an uptick, I think we're going to do really well in the International League this year.
Yeah, that's what it sounded about. It's that kind of roster. I'll tell you that everybody knows the opening scene of Major League when the groundskeepers are sitting on a break looking over the roster. Who are these guys? That's what the Oriole lineup looked like today. So
I'm trying to laugh instead of cry, but yeah, it's not easy being an Orioles fan these days. You really do have to have a program when you walk into Camden Yards.
Yeah, so program sales are up. We talked yesterday about the Washington Nationals are holding everybody hostage with their bags, so they'll be cash grabbing on the locker sales. So now program sales up for the Orioles. That was Trey Mancini that just hit E3. You know, the first baseman who dove.
The ball went right through his glove.
On a dot. No, it's an error on the third baseman, if anything. Give me a break.
All right, so I'm going E3.
No, I guarantee it's not an error on the diving first baseman who could not come up with the ball. Guarantee on that. So they might even score a run while you're on the air here, Mike, so that's something to look forward to. They did. Wow. Runner at second, single up the middle, and scored them. So you've already been a good luck charm. And
I'm staying on the air with you for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, the rest of the season.
162 interviews.
Whole season long just to see if we can coax a winning record out of the O's. A new regime there in Baltimore. They've taken a step or two back to hopefully go forward somewhere down the line. Speaking of going forward, I know you reported right after the season that Tyus Battle, as we long suspected, would be going pro, and now as they're publicizing an autograph signing event for him this weekend at Destiny USA, that cinches it, because once he starts taking the money, there's no return.
Yeah, either he's leaving or we've got a major violation on our hands.
Right. Right.
No, it's we knew this was pretty much a fait accompli all year long. Even last year when he announced that he was returning after putting his name into the draft, I think his statement at the time said, "I'll come back for my last year."
Yes.
So I think he always approached this, "I'm going to go back for one more year." He's got himself very close to having enough credits to graduate. And even if he doesn't graduate at the end of this semester, he's so close that he will have no problem wrapping up his degree at any time he wants. You know, people have asked me, "Oh, but he's not going to get drafted, or he's late second round in this mock, or he's not in any round in this one. Why wouldn't he come back?" And I'm like, well, because kids are different these days, and there's opportunities out there, and he wants to just move on with his life and with his pro career. And you can't argue that this coming back for his junior year helped his draft stock, so why would coming back for yet another year help? I think it's time. I think most of us agree. It's time for him to move on and start embarking on whatever pro career he's going to have.
I totally agree with you, Mike. I agree with him. And my way of answering that typically is, first, we all think that selfishly. Everybody here wants Syracuse basketball to thrive and do the best it can and be the most representative team that it can be. I would love to see Tyus Battle on the team next year.
Sure.
I know it's unrealistic. I know it's not his dream. His dream is to be a professional basketball player. There's a lot of professional basketball outside the NBA. There's no shame in being not quite good enough to make the NBA, and I hope it works for him. But it might not. It doesn't matter. The point is, you got to take the leap sometime, and now is his time to do it. He's not going to be in better draft position next year at this time. It doesn't really work that way. So I don't think it's fair for really anybody on the outside to fault him for a decision like that.
No. The other thing, too, is you're talking about a kid who was pretty much mentally and emotionally ready to go a year ago and ultimately decided, okay, it's not quite lining up the way I hoped. Rather than rush out now, I will come back for one more year. Pretty hard to tell that kid, okay, on top of that, do another year. So he moves on, and I think we'll look back on his career as one of a stellar offensive player, over 1,600 points, number 16 all-time on Syracuse's scoring list, only a couple, two or three guys that had three-year careers with more points than him, one of the biggest clutch performers in Syracuse history with key performances in late game situations, buzzer beaters, game winners, and a guy who comported himself both on and off the court with class and dignity. And I think he's one that you're going to put his picture up all over the place, Mello Center, everywhere. I think hats off to Tyus on a great career.
100% agree. Can't say it better. And I appreciate your pointing that out, and wish him the best, and hope that he continues to maintain a relationship with the university and with the program, because Tyus is a class act. He doesn't owe anything to anybody. And as we transition, Mike, into kind of a wrap-up of the year, you just touched on something that I think the supposition was last year at this time, when Tyus went through that process, pulled his name out, and came back. One of the things you feared for him right away is, well, he can't possibly have the numbers in his junior season as his sophomore year, because look at how many good players there are and look how they're all going to advance and they're going to share the ball and they're going to score a zillion points, but he can't average 18 again. And he, boy, that was off, huh? As it turns out, I mean, he again was clearly the best player, and for both his own personal development or stat line and for the team's performance, it didn't really work out the way that was forecasted.
No, especially the team. This year's team had a lot of high expectations on it before the season started. Even Jim Boeheim down at ACC Media Day had told reporters there he thought this was going to be the best team he had had since 2014, which, as you remember, that team got off to a 25-0 start. So the expectations might have been a little bit overblown, as it turned out. A few guys maybe didn't quite take that next step forward. And, you know, while disappointing, again, not all that unusual. Sometimes development doesn't happen on a gradual, steady, consistent, year-to-year basis. So, you know, we'll look and see if some of these guys do take another step forward. I think Frank's injury and being absent through all of preseason and the first four games of the year, I think that took a toll on this team. I think it hurt this team basically throughout the season. You know, some of the early season losses that wound up impacting Syracuse's tournament seed, you know, can be, you know, look at again with an injured Frank Howard. So, but we'll see. I think there are a couple bright spots, and it's kind of hard to really see those bright spots after a first round loss to Baylor. But I thought Buddy Boeheim was a bright spot. I thought Elijah Hughes was a bright spot, and a guy that maybe not enough people are talking about. Right? A guy who averaged barely, like, what was it, 5-7 points a game at East Carolina as a freshman, then sits out a year and comes here to Syracuse into the ACC. And as basically a redshirt sophomore, he's averaging in double figures. He had a run there at one point in the season where he was scoring 12 points or more. And you might remember the numbers, but it was like 13 out of 14 games.
I kept citing it, Mike, early in the year, because it wasn't like he'd hit 15 points in that stretch. He'd hit almost exactly 15 points in that stretch.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. His worst game was 14 and his best game was 17, something like that. So The definition of consistency, he didn't really light. He had a couple games later in the year where he lit people up. Didn't really do that for that period. And that was where, to me, you want to give somebody credit for what they did after sitting out a year. That's the impressive part for me, that he didn't really have the ups and downs, that he brought it every night for a good 2 month period there.
Yeah, hit a little bit of a lull about two-thirds of the way through the season. I think he got tired. He had never played that kind of minutes before in his life, certainly not at East Carolina, and then having to sit out a year, and so you're going back to his high school days. So he never played this many games and this many minutes in his life, and I think he got a little, but once he got his legs back underneath him again, he was right back at it and shot the ball really well from three-point range. And as you mentioned, late in the year, the game he had against Baylor, I mean, he shot Syracuse into that game when Baylor was about ready to shoot him out early. And looking ahead the next year, I think he is a bright spot to be watching.
I agree. There's a highlight for him. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it, but he hits the three right next to the Baylor bench and kind of turns and gives a little stare to Scott Drew. He was really feeling it on that night. He was in the zone a couple of times this year, and that one in particular, where he had three games this year. We had 6 3-pointers and a couple others with five. So you take that and extrapolate it into a year where he moves a little bit up on the option list, and Elijah Hughes is a guy that could take a jump next season. What about the roster composition here, Mike? I don't expect you to be, you know, in your crystal ball and being able to tell necessarily defections or who else leaves beyond the obvious three. But my understanding is they have at least the one scholarship to manipulate here and to use. How do you see this shaken out, and what additions might there be?
Well, the one kid that they're looking at is a kid named Jesse Edwards. He's a 6'10", 6'11". Center from the Netherlands, and he just arrived at IMG Academy down in Bradenton, Florida back in January. So he's basically spent the last 2 months playing here in the United States for the first time and just coming across most schools' radar, and he's definitely on Syracuse's. Alan Griffin, the Syracuse assistant coach, has a lot of strong ties down in Florida. and especially at IMG Academy. His former boss at St. Francis of New York, Brian Nash, mm-hmm. now works at IMG.
He's like the athletic director there,
he's not the
there,
coach
right?
of the post-grad team, yeah. but he still works down there. Yeah. So there's a connection for Griff, and they're on the Edwards is he visited Georgia Tech earlier this week, and he's scheduled to visit Syracuse next Monday and Tuesday. I think they're very intrigued by him. Their scholarship offer has already been extended. If they were to get him, they'd probably be done. I think they wouldn't mind adding another young big. The grad transfer market, there's a lot of players in the transfer portal. There's a lot of names being bandied about. I think their first preference is to bring in a younger player. I know fans panic. They want to bring in a stopgap guy because nothing's going to work out. And, you know, DEFCON 5, you know, how are we going to, you know, how are we going to survive next year on centers like Barama and Marek and John Bolajak? But I think the coaches prefer to bring in a kid that is going to be a program player, one that they can develop. And because some of the fifth-year grad transfers work out great. Some don't. Syracuse has had Andrew White, who came in, filled a need, great three-point shooter, worked out well. Geno Thorpe, complete opposite, right. gone after six games. You have to be careful because obviously when these guys make that fifth-year grad transfer move, they're making it for personal reasons, very personal reasons. So you have to be careful about what kind of kid you're getting, what's his attitude towards that one last year he's going to have, and does he really fit in with your needs and with your roster? So we'll see. But, yeah, keep an eye on Jesse Edwards coming up to the campus next week.
Both of the players you mentioned were on their third school, which has a bit of a connotation to it. I think in Andrew White's case, didn't apply. You know, Andrew White, Kansas, Nebraska, Syracuse, it didn't mean he was a bad seed or whatever, that he'd been in three schools. And for that matter, John Gillen, three schools. Geno Thorpe, three schools. Mm-hmm. Those were different kind of guys. I'm not saying they were bad people or whatever, but I think when people have been, there's pros and cons, let's say, of somebody that's traveled around to that degree. Mike Waters is our guest, powered as always by Drivers Village and Eagle County Mutual Insurance. A couple other things just to get a quick thought on. The coaching carousel impacted a couple of upstate New Yorkers this week. Patrick Beilein, I think we had started to hear whispers on him to Niagara. That's now official. And Nate Oates takes one of the major conference positions available this offseason as he leaves Buffalo for Alabama.
And it'll be really interesting to see what Buffalo does. The first rumors I've been hearing is they're likely to take a strong look at one of their assistant coaches and promote from within and just try to keep the train rolling there. They've had so much success in recent years, first with Bobby Hurley and now with Nate Oates. You know, I could definitely see the positives in doing that. You keep your recruiting class and your current players. You try not to lose too many guys. Siena just did the same thing. When they lost their coach, they quickly promoted from within. Stony Brook did the exact same thing. It's interesting to see how many of these schools are looking to promote from within, and largely that's to keep players from leaving and recruits from bolting. So
it's also the devil you know, right? Especially in this climate of ongoing FBI and NCAA investigations and what have you, if you bring in somebody you're not familiar with and they've got a past that you don't want to deal with.
True. You do know who you got on staff. And maybe if you're the athletic director at a Stony Brook, a Siena, or even a Buffalo, if you know who you have on your staff, and you know, you don't have to hire a search firm. You don't have to ask people in the business or people at other schools for recommendations or stuff like that. You know, and if you feel strongly that way, you're going to know that person better than you're going to know anybody else when you start doing interviews and casting a wide net. So I totally understand that. Sometimes that person's not on your staff, and you see schools go in many different directions. But I think Nate Oates and Bobby Hurley, they have made that Buffalo job incredibly desirable. It's amazing to see where that program has gone just over like the last 6-7 years. And, you know, Patrick Beilein leaving Lemoyne, I mean, man, he enjoyed so much success at Lemoyne. I think it's three straight NCAA tournaments. A year ago, he was in the Elite Eight. And now he's really going to have to go and do some heavy lifting because Niagara's really been down. I think their last NCAA tournament appearance was 2007.
Tough league to compete in,
they're in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, and that's not a conference that is easy to make your way up the ladder in. you got some really good basketball schools in that league. So he's got his work cut out for him.
That's a one-bid league. Iona has had a stranglehold on it really for the last decade. And that, by the way, could be a coach that maybe would go elsewhere, but he's been so locked into the New York City area. I don't know what Tim Klus's options would be there, but I agree. And I agree. You know, to me, if I'm Patrick Beilein, and God love him, we all enjoy being around him and are hopeful for his future. You got to go somewhere at some point. He had flirted with Siena last year, and I think Siena's probably a better job than Niagara just because they've had the roadmap and have had some success somewhere in the recent, you know, somewhat recent past. But Niagara, he'll go, and we'll see how good a coach he is, and he'll have to see what works there for him. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Certainly the Syracuse staff, you know, potentially look at those assistants and what they want to do to advance their own careers, and a story I know that you'll continue to follow, Mike, through the offseason. Sweet 16, just
absolutely
something to wrap with you on. Sweet 16 gets fired back up tonight and tomorrow. There's the five ACC teams involved. Do you have anything in particular that you're looking at, or an insight to maybe share in terms of how we frame these games up?
Well, I think North Carolina got some really bad news that they announced today when Nasir Little was not at practice.
Oh, I didn't see that.
He's back at the hotel because of flu-like symptoms. Apparently, he did not practice yesterday on campus, and he's not practicing today. And they're worried about him for tomorrow. And he averaged 19.5 points per game in their first two games in the NCAA tournament. And he's really come on late in the year. And he's the type of guy they need going up against a very strong and athletic Auburn team. So if Carolina does not have Nasir Little, I think you worry a little bit about the Tar Heels in that one. Because you look at some of their other front court plays. Luke May's not incredibly athletic. Veteran, solid, smart, shoots the ball really well and all that. But athletically, he's not going to match up against some of the big Auburn guys. And then you have Garrison Brooks. And, again, not overwhelmingly athletic. Nasir Little, I don't know. So we'll see. But I think that's one to look for tomorrow night when the Tar Heels take the floor. You know, the other than that, it's like I look forward to Texas Tech, Florida State, you know. You know, we'll see where some of these games go. But I can't wait to get it ratcheted back up again. Four more days, four straight days of basketball.
Well, it's
just
pretty
like
awesome.
Last weekend.
Yeah, now you don't really have to work the clicker either. There shouldn't be too many, maybe two games going at once, but you got to be able to settle in on them and hunker down. So looking forward to that. A lot more baseball to be watched here. And the Yankees are batting right now, Mike, so it can only get worse for you. But in the... The score did not change after that initial run in the time we talked, so still 4-1 Yankees against your Orioles in the home half of the fifth.
It's going to be a long season, isn't it, Matt?
No sense getting worked up on opening day is what you're saying.
No. Right. It's okay. You know what? I'm just going to count down the days until I'm back on the air with you and Paulie again.
That'll be
for
fun.
Basketball season next year.
Looking forward to it. Start the countdown. We'll send you a calendar.
Awesome.
We could probably dig one up here from a sponsor or something. So
I like that he thinks I'll still have a job.
Yeah, that's right. Paulie lasting the summer, that's presumptuous too.
Despite rumors to the contrary, I'm putting my money on Paulie being here.
Wow, okay. That's not the best investment you've ever made, but we appreciate the time, Michael, and enjoy the offseason. We'll look forward to reading as you chronicle what's next, okay?
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure all season.
You bet. Mike Waters, New York State Sports Writer of the Year from the Post Standard and Syracuse.com.
Mike Waters has one more Coach Griff show on Monday.
Wrapping it up?
Yep. So they'll do a season recap on Monday at 7 from Attilio's on James.
Okay. Good stuff there. Well timed. And looking forward to checking that out. Okay. On April 1st. It's not an April Fool's joke, just an April 1 recap. All right, when we come back here, we'll get into some news items and Paulie's Do We Care? Keep you abreast of this opening day here with not only the Yankees and Mets getting things started, but other action starting to cascade on the schedule throughout the day. A lot of day games early in baseball, obviously, to play when the sun is out and then to clear the way for the resumption of the Sweet 16 and the NCAA basketball tournament tonight. This is In the Booth, brought to you by CH Insurance and Burdick Lexus out in Cicero. On ESPN Radio.
Do we care?
Interesting.
I doubt it.
No, wait, the other thing. Tedious.
But we will do this segment anyway.
Don't care anymore. Don't care.
Well, Matt, for the second consecutive year, the Athletic surveyed baseball players across Major League Baseball. And for the second consecutive year, Bryce Harper was voted the most overrated player in the league.
I think that's pretty much a no-brainer, no surprise at all to me, because it's a simple formula. He gets paid close to the most, and he's coming off a not spectacular year. He basically hit .210 for almost the entire year last year. Whatever he wound up at, it was just because of a pretty decent finish to the season. A lot of strikeouts, gets a lot of attention, calls a lot of attention to himself. Everybody knew he was going to be a free agent this year, and he got a monster deal. Maybe not as monster as it could have or should have been, but I could totally see that. I think because he's sort of a showy, attention-grabbing player, that that would be my pick for who the players would pick in a vote like that.
The Mets spelled occasion wrong on a mural of Tom Seaver saying rise to the occasion. They spelled it O-C-C. No. Oh, no, O-C. I was spelling it right. They spelled it O-C-A-S-S-I-O-N.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing when mistakes like that are made. Certainly here at Syracuse, we're familiar with those types of mistakes. It just baffles me that there isn't enough oversight to prevent something like that from happening. That I think based on the way it's done, or what we saw, it looks like one of these deals where the artist makes a thing and then he projects it on the wall, he or she, and then goes and paints it, and that nobody saw it or caught it ahead of time really surprises me. And that it obviously was left to the last minute here opening day. In other words, that it was caught and photographed
by
somebody
fan.
That it could have easily been fixed the way it looks to me. And I'm just blown away every time something like that happens. Mistakes happen, but mistakes where you have staff and people and time and should be able to prevent them, mistakes like that are very unfortunate.
Alabama hired Nate Oates to be its next head coach.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, completely reasonable. When Oates signed his extension here recently with Buffalo, I didn't really think that many was going to stick there, maybe another year or so, but really what it did is it raised the buyout for Buffalo. Places like Alabama at the top end of the SEC with that kind of football money, they don't really blink too much at buyouts, and so this doesn't surprise me at all. The thing I'm a little interested to see is Oates is known for speaking his mind, and some would say popping off, and I'll be curious how well that plays there. Does he kind of mind his own P's and Q's for a while and zip it for a bit until they're good? Or does he come right out with guns blazing? I think he's a good coach, knows what he's doing. It wouldn't surprise me if they made some impact there, but I don't think he has recruiting ties where he's going, and it'll take him a little transition time just like everybody else.
And Mike Waters just said that they would probably hire from within. Do you think Syracuse assistants would get called just because of the proximity to that?
To Buffalo? They may. I mean, I think it's possible, because if I'm Buffalo, I would want somebody attached to a prestigious program. The issue going against the Syracuse assistants right now, you know, chiefly we're talking about Jerry McNamara and Adrian Autry, is the program isn't hot. You're not bringing in somebody that you can say, oh, they're connected to a program that's made the Sweet 16 the last 3 years or whatever. Syracuse has had pretty good results now. There's a way you can claim it and spin it, but, you know, they've lost a lot of games here in recent years. They're still going to have the stamp, you know, in the case of Jerry and Red, they're going to have their player credentials. They're going to have the stamp of Coach Boeheim in the Hall of Famer. They've got a lot going for them. It's just that you got to be careful as you word the press release this time.
And finally, Virginia Tech's Ty Outlaw has been charged with possession of marijuana, jeopardizing his status for the remainder of the NCAA tournament.
Well, they said he's going to play. So, at least based on what I've seen going across the bottom line and how that's going, and to me, that's baffling. And I didn't want to get into the political part or the... I just think there's... At this point, there is a taboo on marijuana that is long held. I think it's kind of going away as states legalize it. I think in our lifetimes, this is not going to be considered a big deal anymore. And I say that as somebody, I've never smoked a thing in my life. I've never smoked a cigarette, let alone a joint. But that he's been arrested, you know, and to think, right, that's my understanding, arrested and charged with possession of marijuana, and they're going to play him in the games. Maybe he's complete. I don't know enough to really have much of a comment on it, other than I would say, you know, each it's up to each school how they handle these types of disciplinary issues, and I think you see a range in how schools handle things.
His apartment was searched while they were in San Jose.
Okay.
So that might be part of it.
He was some grounds, and maybe it's his roommates or something else, and they've got some grounds to go back, you know, to argue the claims or whatever it is. I shouldn't comment on without knowing more about it, but to think that somebody was charged like something like this and would play, I don't think he would play at every school.
He was not there when the possession happened, and according to Buzz Williams, after gathering this information, we decided to have an outside agency perform a drug test on Ty prior to departing campus on Wednesday. The test came back negative.
Well, I think you're also dealing with two separate things. That's why I brought up the idea of taboo. What's the claim here? Was he arrested for possession and possession?
Yes.
Like, is he selling this stuff? Or that's separate from using it, and using it as it relates to, you know, it's not a performance enhancing drug, but you can also, you know, take drug tests for what are performance enhancing drugs. And so what is your policy? What's the thing that we would suspend somebody for? Right. And so we're probably getting into deeper waters than we care to here. Nobody was claiming in this case that he used it, you know, but it's illegal to possess. Am I right?
Yes.
So, that is distinct from failing a test, which is more of a athletic department policy issue from school to school, an NCAA issue, than it is necessarily legality. In other words, if you play for Colorado or Colorado State or Air Force or Washington or any of those, it's legal to possess, but then not proper, probably in most cases, on athletic department policy and NCAA policy.
It sounds weird that the police arrived at his apartment at 6:07 on March 20th while they were away and smelled the strong odor of burnt marijuana. So maybe,
well, if he was away, yeah, somebody else.
Yeah, so
either somebody else or somebody setting him up, or, you know, there's a lot of different things it could be. All right, break here. Back to wrap it up with just another quick spin around Major League Baseball's opening day. Great pitcher's duel happening in D.C. today between the Nats and Mets. This is In the Booth, brought to you by CH Insurance and Burdick Lexus on ESPN Radio.
This is In the Booth, presented by CH Insurance, in your corner.
We will wrap up with this on Major League Baseball opening day. The game of the day so far is the Mets and Nats. Early home run by Robinson Cano against Max Scherzer in D.C., but in the first six innings, both Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer with 10 punch-outs. Former Chief Trey Turner with 3 stolen bases. So how long will he be the Major League stolen base leader? Probably like that gets him through the month right now. Thanks to Danny, Pauly, Tommy, the whole crew. I'm Matt. See you later.